And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you live from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, it's December the 8th, 342nd day of the year. Leap year is 343rd. 23 days remain until this year is over with. And on this date in history, there have been a lot of things happen. In 395, later Yan is defeated by its former vassal, Northern Wei, at the Battle of Kanhi Slope. 757, Du Fu returns to Chang'an as a member of the Emperor Zhenzong's court after having escaped the city during the Anlutian Rebellion. 877, Louis the Stammerer, son of Charles the Bald, is crowned king of the Western Frankish Kingdom at Compiègne. 1432, the first battle between the forces of Sprit Regalia and Sigismund Castutatis is fought near the town of Osmiana, launching the most active phase of the Lithuanian Civil War. 1504, Ahmad Ibn Abi Zuwa writes his Oran Fatwa, arguing for the relaxation of the Islamic law requirements for the forcibly converted Muslims in Spain. 1660, a woman, and it was either Margaret Hughes or Anne Marshall, appears on an English public stage for the first time, plays the role of Desdemona in a production of Shakespeare's play Othello. Prior to that, men played women's parts. Women who wanted to be actresses were considered loose. 1851, conservative Santiago-based government troops defeat rebels at the Battle of Loncomilla, signaling the end of the 1851 Chilean Revolution. 1854, in his apostolic constitution, in the Fabulus Deus, Pope Pius IX proclaims the dogmatic definition of Immaculate Conception, which holds that the Blessed Virgin Mary was conceived free of original sin. 1864, Pope Pius IX promulgates the encyclical Quatuor Cura in its appendix, the Syllabus of Errors, outlining the authority of the Catholic Church, condemning various liberal ideas. You know, it's nice when you can decide what authority you have. 1907, King Gustav V of Sweden accedes to the Swedish throne. 1912, leaders of the German Empire hold an imperial war council to discuss the possibility that war might break out. 1914, World War I, a squadron of Britain's Royal Navy defeats the Imperial German East Asia Squadron in the Battle of the Falkland Islands in the South Atlantic. 1941, President Roosevelt declares December 7th to be a date which will live in infamy, after which the U.S. declares war on Japan for the attack on Pearl Harbor. 1941, Japanese forces simultaneously invade Shanghai International Settlement, Malaya, Thailand, Hong Kong, the Philippines, and the Dutch East Indies. 1943, the German 117th Jäger Division destroys the monastery of Megaspiliano in Greece and executes some. As I was saying, 1943, during World War II, the German 117th Jäger Division destroys the monastery of Megaspiliano in Greece and executes 22 monks and visitors as part of reprisals that culminated a few days later with the massacre of Kalarvitra. 1953, President Eisenhower delivers his Adams for Peace speech, which leads to an American program to supply equipment and information on nuclear power to schools, hospitals, research institutions around the world. Yes, let's help our enemies blow us up. In 1955, the flag of Europe is adopted by the Council of Europe. 1962, workers at four New York City newspapers go on strike for 114 days. That eventually became nine newspapers. 1963, Pan Am Flight 214, a Boeing 707, is struck by lightning and crashes near Elkton, Maryland, kills all 81 people on board. 1966, the Greek ship SS Heraklion sinks in a storm in the Aegean Sea, kills over 200 people. 1969, Olympic Airways Flight 954 strikes a mountain outside of Karatia, Greece, killing 90 people in the worst crash of a Douglas DC-6 in history. 1971, Indo-Pakistani War. Indian Navy launches an attack on West Pakistan's port city of Karachi. 1972, United Airlines Flight 553, a Boeing 737, crashes after aborting its landing attempt at Chicago's Midway International Airport, kills 45. This was the first ever loss of a Boeing 737. 1974, plebiscite results in the abolition of the monarchy in Greece. 1980, former Beatle John Lennon is murdered in front of the Dakota, New York City, by an individual whose father was having lunch at that time with George H.W. Bush. 1985, the South Asian Association for Regional Cooperation, a regional intergovernmental organization and geopolitical union in South Asia, is established. 1987, during the Cold War, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty signed by President Reagan and Soviet leader Gorbachev in the White House. 1987, an Israeli Army tank transporter kills 4 Palestinian refugees and injures 7 others during a traffic accident at the Erez crossing on the Israel-Gaza Strip border. It's been cited as one of the events that sparked the first Intifada. Now, the Intifada was a sustained series of Palestinian protests, in some cases violent riots, against the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. It lasted from December 1987 till the Madrid Conference in 1991, though some believe it actually concluded in 1993 with the signing of the Oslo Accords. Alrighty, let's see what we got. 1988, U.S. Air Force A-10 Thunderbolt 2 crashes into an apartment complex in Remscheid, Germany, kills 5 people and injures 50 others. 1990, the Galileo spacecraft flies past Earth for the first time. 1991, the leaders of Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine sign an agreement dissolving the Soviet Union, establishing the Commonwealth of Independent States. 1992, the Galileo spacecraft flies past Earth for the second time. Only took 2 years for it to make that swing. 1998, 81 people are killed by armed groups in Algeria. 2004, the Cusco Declaration is signed in Cusco, Peru, establishes a South American community of nations. 2009, bombings in Baghdad, Iraq, killed 127 and injured 448 others. In 2010, with the second launch of the Falcon 9 and the first launch of the Dragon, SpaceX becomes the first private company to successfully launch, orbit, and recover a spacecraft. 2010, the Japanese solar sail spacecraft Icarus passes the planet Venus at a distance of about 80,800 kilometers. 2013, riots break out in Singapore after a fatal accident in Little India. 2013, Metallica performs a show in Antarctica, making them the first band to perform on all 7 continents. And in 2019, on this date, we have the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in China, which of course was covered up. Okay, let's see what else we got. A lot of births and deaths. Holidays and observances, in the Falklands we have Battle Day. In Japan we have Bodhi Day, Caracan, Cuban Day in the Caribbean community, Christian Feats Day, Budak of Doya, Clement of Ohrid. In Bulgaria we have Students Day, Eucharius, Feast of the Immaculate Conception. It's a public holiday in several countries, a day of religious obligation in others, and its related observances. We have the conception of the Virgin Mary in the Anglican community. Festa de Consuelo de Praia, celebrating the Queen of the Ocean in Mbanda. Festival of Lights in Leon. Mother's Day in Panama. Lady of Cameron Day in Guam. Patapios of Thebes. Pope Eudoxia Richard Baxter in the Episcopal Church in the U.S. Romaric. Constitution Day in Romania. Constitution Day in Uzbekistan. Day of Finnish Music in Finland. Earliest day on which National Tree Planting Day can fall. December 14 is the latest, celebrated on the second Monday in December in Mowali. Harikuyo in Japan. And National Youth Day in Albania. Let's see what else we might have. In 1609, Biblioteca Ambrosiana in Milan opens its reading room, which is the second public library in Europe. 1659, the Mexican border town of Ciudad Juarez, right across the river from where I'm sitting, is founded by Fray Garcia de San Francisco. 1710, Battle of Brihuega in the War of the Spanish Succession, and British General James Stanhope is captured by French and Spanish forces. On this day in 1776, George Washington's retreating army crosses the Delaware River from New Jersey. 1777, Captain James Cook leaves Society Islands. 1854, as I said, Pope Pius IX proclaimed the Immaculate Conception, and with the signing of that document, made Mary free of the original sin. I'm not sure what the original sin was supposed to be, but she didn't have it. 1863, 2,500 killed as a result of the fire at the Jesuit Church of La Campana in Santiago, Chile. 1863, Lincoln issues his amnesty proclamation and plans for reconstruction of the South. 1864, the Clifton Suspension Bridge, designed by Isambard Kingdom Brunei, is finally opened in Bristol, England, 5 years after his death. 1874, Jesse James and his gang take a train at Muncie, Kansas. 1876, Suriname begins compulsory education for 7 to 12 years. 1886, the American Federation of Labor, formed by 26 craft unions, elects Samuel Gompers as AFL president. 1895, the battle at Amba Alagi, Ethiopian Emperor Menelik II drives Italian General Barrettiera out of the country. 1902, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. becomes Associate Justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. 1914, the Boers, rebelling against the British in South Africa, suffer several defeats, with one of their leaders, General Beyers, accidentally drowning. 1915, John McCrae's poem In Flanders Fields appears anonymously in Punch magazine. He was a World War I soldier and a poet. 1935, the Japanese military police launch a violent suppression of the religious sect Omoto, beginning with a crackdown on the sect's operational bases of Ayabe and Kamioka in Kyoto Prefecture and the arrest of its leader. In 1941, Russia's 16th Army recaptures Krizhukovo. 1941, San Francisco has its first blackout at 6:15 p.m. And on this date in 1941, the U.S. and Britain declare war on Japan, and we get involved in World War II. This was also, as I said, the day that President Roosevelt delivered his Day of Infamy speech. In 1946, on this date, the U.S. Army rocket plane XS-1 makes its first powered flight. Okay. All right, we have, what happened? There we go. In 1951, the American League altered its restriction on night games, adopting the National League's suspended game rule and lifting its ban on lights for Sunday games. 1952, on the I Love Lucy show, was the first TV acknowledgement of the pregnancy of a star. Prior to that, apparently everybody had the Immaculate Conception. Okay. I'm sure we have, ...1962, the funeral for Queen Wilhelmina of Holland is held in Newkirk. She was Queen of the Netherlands. 1963, Frank Sinatra Jr. was kidnapped. Mm-hmm. 1976, the UN General Assembly re-elects Kurt Waldheim, Secretary General. He was the fourth Secretary General, also a former member, according to rumor of the SS. Okay, I'm sure we have something else. Okay. On this date in 1936, the King of England abdicates because he wants to marry Wallis Simpson, an American divorcee. 1936, we have come to the end of our little history session for today. We were talking about World War II related ghosts. There have been a number of folks who have encountered The Battle of Deep. Nearly a now that took place in August of 1942. In August of 1952, two Lingus women, their children, and a nurse were vacationing near the site of the raid. In fact, they stayed in a house that the German officers had stayed in during that period. The view from the home offered a perfect vista of the beach where some of the fiercest fighting occurred. For several days, their trip was fine, but then on the morning of August 4th, just a couple of weeks before the anniversary of the battle, their vacation house shook. The ladies later talked about what happened that morning. They said they woke up to the unmistakable sounds of a violent battle. Sounds of machine gun fire and booms of cannons echoed in the early dawn skies. Women could hear people screaming and yelling commands, and of course they jumped out of bed and ran out to the balcony expecting to see all hell breaking loose on the beach, and it was still dark. They didn't see anything. They didn't see any men barking orders. They didn't see any guns. And what was interesting is the other members of the family didn't hear anything. Well, as the shouts and noises faded, women decided to go back to bed, but they tried to figure out what had happened. Then they heard the battle sounds again. In fact, over the next hour or so, the strange sounds undulated, reached a peak shortly before dawn, and it wasn't just the sea and the shore that seemed alive. The sky was filled with the sound of dive bombers strafing the beach, and they could hear other aircraft flying overhead. During the morning's events, the ladies, though terrified, started to make notes about what they were hearing, and they marked down the timing of the sounds. Later, they created reports for the British Society for Psychical Research, and they investigated the claims. And the diary of events that they turned in matched the deep operation almost perfectly. Even the aircraft noise corresponded to the late arrival of British war planes during the battle. The booming artillery likewise matched the time that destroyers began to pepper the beach with artillery fire. And unless these women were experts who were thoroughly knowledgeable about the battle, or they had a detailed history of the raid, this was pre-internet period, little chance they could just guess the precise timeline of the battle. In fact, the official account of the deep raid had been censored and would contain the timing of the battle, and it wasn't published till several months after the women's experience. Now, most occult experts, including members of the society, believed the women had a genuine supernatural encounter with this infamously haunted World War II battlefield. And even today, decades after war raged over the Western Front of World War II, the evidence of the destruction that rained down on the land is still quite visible. Pockmarked fields, shattered walls, piles of rubble are just some of the physical remains of the war. Now, there was a group of ghost hunters. In fact, it was a paranormal investigation team from Wuppertal. And they had an interest in the field, but it didn't come from an encounter with a battlefield, on a battlefield, at least not right away, but from an experience he had in an aunt's house in Luxembourg when he was the leader of it had this experience when he was about 12. He said, "We heard footsteps and doors open and close," and he said that his parents told him some years later that when the workmen were digging in the cellar, they found a skeleton, which, of course, they believe may be the reason for the haunting. He and his, as they call it, life partner, had several encounters with the supernatural, which prompted their desire to find evidence of ghosts in Europe, including the spirit activities of the region's World War II battlefields. In fact, while living in an apartment, the couple heard strange noises coming from the storage area. And so they went to check it out, and of course they didn't find anybody. But a few nights later, the leader of the group's name was Tom Pidal, and his main squeeze was Clutie Winterkamp. And Clutie saw something a few nights later. She saw a ball of fog about 30, 40 centimeters in diameter appear in front of her. And after that happened, a whole lot of paranormal activity started to occur. They saw human-shaped shadows, heard noises, noticed doors that opened and closed on their own. And it wasn't just the humans in the apartment that witnessed all this activity. The animals reacted weirdly. They had a couple of cats. Once they saw the American television show Ghost Hunters, they became hooked on the idea. They realized they could both investigate the paranormal and help people. Some of the places needed the most help included the scenes of death, trauma, and violence on the many nearby battlefields. This large area had erupted during the Battle of the Bulge in 1944, and it became the focus of a few of their own investigations. And they became convinced that ghosts still walk portions of this ground. Now, according to historians, the Battle of the Bulge was a desperate last counteroffensive by Hitler's army. And had they won, they could have turned the momentum of the war around. With the Russians blasting through the Eastern Front and the American English forces squeezing in on the Western Front, Hitler gambled when he threw everything left in the German war machine at the Americans, taking strategic advantage of a bulge it had developed in a quiet sector of the front. In fact, they hoped to take the Americans by surprise, make a quick thrust to the sea, and scatter the Allied supply lines. And it almost worked. But the American forces are far more tenacious than the Germans had assumed, and General Patton proved to be far quicker in an effort to relieve the troops manning the lines at the Bulge. And miraculously, the weather turned favorably for the Allies, allowing the once-grounded fighters and bombers to fly missions against the German forces in the area. Now, this paranormal group had investigated several sections of the Bulge battlefield at least four times. And they have plans to do quite a number of research tours in the future. The site is that active, according to the group. They guess that the Hasselpath might be one of the haunted places because much of the action swirled around the area. When the battle began, the German troops made Hasselpath one of their primary objectives, and they turned that area into a bloodbath. After a fierce fight, the onslaught of the German armor and infantry forced the Americans to retreat and take up new defensive positions on the next ridge. And the Germans used the Hasselpath corridor as a staging area for further attacks on the American lines, but fortunately for us, they didn't succeed. But as these attacks grew more desperate, more fierce, more violent, the dead and wounded just piled up. And this ghost hunting team has collected evidence that some of those spirits are still on the battlefield. During one investigative tour, the team used an infrared camera to take pictures of a fortification on the battlefield. When they analyzed the results, one of the images seemed to show the outline of a human being. And another photo showed an American soldier hunkered down in a foxhole. And they also carried tape recorders in hopes of picking up electronic voice phenomena. In one snippet, the English word peacemaker seems to rise above all the static and natural sounds of the environment. Now, according to Tom, he said he had actually seen an apparition during the investigation. He said he was startled when a person crossed the dense undergrowth just a few meters in front of him. Now, they tried their best to debunk the sighting, thinking it might just be a tourist. But when they walked to the site and couldn't locate any trace of a person moving through the area, the ground was wet, but there were no footprints. The group planned to do more investigations of battlefields, especially at the area near the Bulge, and then maybe go down to Normandy. Now, war exposes the darkest corner of the human soul. It's a darkness that on one hand disgusts us and also attracts or even ensnares our attention on the other. Military historians say that a group of artifact collectors who don't seem to be repelled by war, but in fact enthralled by it, remain one obstacle to their ability to uncover the actual facts of World War II battlefield. They call these artifact collectors black archaeologists. Now, these folks are actually battlefield scavengers. They'll scour fields and forests for guns, munitions, daggers, knives, medals, and other artifacts left over from the war. Bones, skulls, and other macabre souvenirs are even plucked from graves, and mass graves aren't necessarily outside the scope of what they'll collect. as long as they can find a buyer, that is. In a few cases, though, black archaeologists on clandestine digs for war booty have encountered forces so dark and powerful they've accomplished the unlikely. These forces may have just scared a sense of humanity back into these hard-hearted memorabilia buzzards. There's one incident, according to stories that make the rounds, that occurred in Russia on the Eastern Front, which is where some of the war's most brutal fighting took place. According to the stories compiled in the Russian newspaper Pravda, a group of six black archaeologists began an excavation at a site near the Makarevsky Monastery, which had been turned into a convent. Monastery is near the town of Leskovo on the banks of the Volga River. I think I mentioned that in our history section. You can only imagine the misery and the atrocities that occurred during the fierce fight between the German and the Soviet forces, but memories and misery couldn't stop this band of profiteers from camping on this site, hoping to uncover a potentially profitable booty. And initially, the hunt was unremarkable. They spent much of the day working and moving their operations closer and closer to the grounds of the monastery. But night began to close in on them, and the darkness finally made further digs almost impossible. And that was when one of the team noticed a fire lighting the sky. Looked like a bonfire burning in the distance, so they decided to investigate. When they got closer, they realized it wasn't a bonfire at all. It was a weird fire that was burning in midair. And as they got closer, the fire faded and stopped completely, like somebody snuffed it out. Now, while the fire in the sky may have died out, the supernatural fireworks were just getting started. Later that night, as they bedded down for sleep, they heard ghastly human screams erupting in the forest. And, of course, the screams unsettled everybody. Later that morning, one of the party entered the forest, and even though the camp was only a few feet away, became completely disoriented. He finally returned, but his friends knew quickly that something wasn't right. An insane expression was etched on his face. His eyes flashed wildly. No matter how much his friends questioned him, he refused to tell them what he saw on his trip into the forest. Well, whatever spiritual battle the souvenir hunter fought in that forest would, like many other artifacts of the war, remain hidden on that battlefield. They were happy just to get out of there in one piece. There's another haunted spot that rests in the once battle-ridden Eastern Front, and it's located about 20 miles from Novgorod. 1942, thousands of Soviet soldiers attacked a formidable defensive position staffed by some of the Nazis' best-trained soldiers. In a vain attempt to relieve the Nazi stranglehold on Leningrad, the Soviets attacked the position with little armor support. They relied instead on artillery and the courage of its infantry to beat back the German soldiers and their allies. Unfortunately, courage and artillery weren't enough, though. The offensive collapsed, and the troops who were part of the maneuver to flank the Nazis became cut off and eventually destroyed. Well, war relic hunters say the anguish of the battle can still be felt and heard in that forest. One hunter who searched the territory said that screams echoed during the night. He said it wasn't a solo scream of one or two practical jokers fooling around. It was though the battle still raged. The individual in question, who was a female, said she could hear soldiers call out hooray as if they were on the attack. And these sounds of encouragement turned to screams of terror as the battle turned against them. In another weird incident, the relic hunters and some said some force unexpectedly led her to a deadly find. While walking behind her group, something made her pause. Now, the relic hunters had searched near that spot before, so she didn't expect to find anything new. But she looked into the sky and saw the trees leaning in a strange direction. The rest of the forest was still. There was no breeze, not a single sound. And she called out to the other members who joined her in searching. In no time at all, they found a decomposed wooden box, and inside that box, they found a stack of old landmines. Had those things been activated, they would have still been deadly. Another battlefield explorer named Alexei said that during a dig at Bransk, they excavated the bodies of several soldiers, six Russians and 11 Germans from the trench. Later that night, the men camped out just a few yards from where the skeletons they had unearthed still rested. They knew the forest, which the locals considered sacred ground, was spooky enough at night, but now they knew their camping site stood just a few feet from the corpses of men mowed down in their prime. It gave it an entirely new macabre vibe. Already on edge, the team made sure one member of the group would stand guard as the other slept. But any guard would be ineffectual against the forces this group would soon encounter. Later that night, the guard ran to the sleeping relic hunters and woke them up. Heard something strange and wanted him to verify what he was hearing. Well, groggy but awake, they listened intently and began to make out the noises he was talking about. At first, they tried to determine the source of the sounds, but they realized these weren't just noises, they were human voices. In the silence, the group soon discerned that the voices were speaking and even singing. Commands in German were barked out, too, echoing in the forest. And then it got really weird. The group may have even collected the first bit of evidence of ghost tanks. They claimed to hear the metallic clanking of treads, like those of armored vehicles scraping along the forest floor. Now, the next morning, the group returned to the trenches where they'd uncovered the bodies. And they were horrified and baffled. Next to the ditches that the team excavated the day before, they noticed fresh trenches, ones they knew they didn't dig. And as a group of military experts, they recognized they were looking at anti-tank trenches. They matched the exact specifications. And just when this group of war relic hunters thought it couldn't get any weirder, it did. Near the trenches, they noticed fresh tank tracks. Now, in some cases, haunted history can reveal actual history. While excavating the site in the eastern section of Voronezh, researcher Genrik Silanov told Pravda he took some routine photos. And when he examined those photos more closely, he found they weren't just routine photos at all. He could see the ghostly figures in the shots of soldiers that definitely weren't there when he took the pictures. In fact, the photos are so clear he can make out uniforms. And as an expert on that era, he immediately recognized that one of the ghost soldiers wore a Czechoslovakian uniform. But he also knew this couldn't be the case because the Czechs weren't involved in this particular fight. So he decided to investigate the matter a little bit more. And when he finished his research, he found that, in fact, Czech units had served and died in that battle. They had been integrated into Soviet units that fought there. Well, as the war raged across the globe, once out of reach, remote islands became caught up in the tsunami of violence and conflict. One of those formerly peaceful spots was Iwo Jima. In Japanese, Iwo means sulfur, a smelly substance that prophets and seers fit into their description of hell and the underworld. And for the thousands of American and Japanese troops battling on Iwo Jima, the description matched their hellish experience on that volcanic island. Thousands were injured. Thousands died. Even more gruesome, thousands of Japanese soldiers who refused to surrender ended up buried alive, crushed when their defensive caverns collapsed under the weight of the volcanic rock, or scorched to death when American troops used flamethrowers to burn out their positions. Most of those bodies were never recovered. And according to the islanders, the spirits of those soldiers trapped under the island may want final release. Witnesses believe these ghosts are behind the most persistent paranormal problems reported since the war. Early one morning, an islander by the name of Yoshikatsu Takeda was sound asleep when a knocking at his door woke him up. Now, he knew that no visitor would be knocking on his door, not a living one anyway. Got out of bed, walked to the door, and opened it. As he expected, no one was there. And he yelled out, "Let's go home," and went back to bed. Now, Takeda, like hundreds of others who live on the island, say the spirits of thousands of war dead who were never properly buried do visit him, looking for people to help him receive the burial they deserve. And they believe these restless spirits will continue to haunt the island until they do get the burial. Now, how many spirits are we talking about? Well, the number could be in the thousands, according to paranormal experts familiar with the Iwo Jima hauntings. Takeda says he suspects the spirits are behind the phenomena because it wasn't the first time he heard that strange knock. He said that it occurred a couple of times before, usually as he was preparing to take a flight off the island, which is now used mainly for military purposes, and go back to Japan. He said, "I guess the spirit wants me to take him over to the mainland. But you don't need to worry. These spirits are not going to hurt you. They just are looking for help." Other witnesses stepping forward claim that the ghost of Iwo Jima don't knock on doors to gain attention. They actually appear when you least expect it. Many people say they've seen the faces of the war dead in the white foam of the sea, or they'll take a picture of the surf and notice what looks like faces etched in the waves. Faces of men wearing agonized expressions. Well, witnesses list a whole host of paranormal entities that they've encountered while staying on the solemn island of Iwo Jima, which is made especially remote because it can only be reached through military transport. It's a huge military base. The number of soldiers, sailors, and Marines have written about unexplained incidents that happened during maneuvers and training exercises on the island. According to one online forum post, for example, a Marine said his battalion had landed on the island to take part in a war game. One night, the Marines were on maneuvers, silently patrolling the silent battleground. As they crept through that dense, dark forest, a few of the Marines, whose senses were honed to razor sharpness by countless training missions, heard what sounded like footsteps following their platoon. Well, in some of these war games, a group of Marines are turned into an enemy team and sent to disrupt operations. And this patrol immediately guessed that one of these enemy teams was following them, maybe getting ready for a sneak attack. Well, using hand signals so the enemy team wouldn't catch on to their planned counterattack, the leader selected a couple of Marines to hang back as a rear guard to protect against this attack. Curiously, nobody in the main body ever heard the commotion, shouts, firing of blanks, etc., that would have signaled that the enemy team had been identified and repulsed. Only an uneasy sound of the ocean breeze rattled the jungle. The main body proceeded to their objective, and the team never discussed the matter. However, one Marine who marched with the main body remained curious about the incident, so the next morning he sought out a few of the men who stood back as the rear guard positioned to engage the enemy team. And when he found them, he noticed right away something was wrong. These tough Marines turned pale white when he brought up the subject. It was like they were afraid to speak, but he pestered them until they told him what happened. Going to the Marines, they dropped back and set up an ambush, and they caught the unmistakable sound of men walking through the jungle. They heard it get louder and louder, and they gripped their weapons as they expected the enemy to come into the clearing to be greeted by the withering chatter of M-16s firing blanks. And seconds later, the enemy did appear, but it wasn't the enemy they expected. In fact, they could see that the soldiers following their column were Japanese soldiers, and they weren't wearing old World War II uniforms. They were carrying weapons from that era as well. Well, there was nothing reported about what happened next, but the misty appearance of the enemy forces from another time deeply affected these men. Nobody wanted to talk about their run-in with this supernatural squad. Now, historians list the amphibious invasion of the island fortress of Okinawa as one of the riskiest, most ferocious battles in the Pacific theater. Japanese knew that the fall of the island like a swinging gate would clear the path for an invasion of their sacred homeland, mainland Japan. Ships had docked at Okinawa, would gather fuel and supplies to encircle Japan, and bombers could use the island's airstrips, and they could more easily reach cities and key bases in Japan. And there was another battle, a psychological one, that went on as well. The Japanese military convinced the people of the island if the Americans landed, they would surely torture and kill all the inhabitants. So panic naturally ensued among the populace when U.S. ships appeared offshore and thousands of Marines and Army personnel spilled out of hundreds of landing crafts onto the beach. The ensuing fight racked up casualty figures that mismatched the size of this relatively small chunk of land in the Pacific. About 50,000 Allied troops were wounded or killed, and the Japanese casualty figure was easily twice that number. The Americans knew they were locked in a winner-take-all grudge match on Okinawa. Still nothing, no amount of training or briefings from officers could have prepared the American soldiers what happened next. A number of American troops watched, horrified, as bands of civilians ran to the island's cliffs and threw themselves into the sea. They did this rather than risk being captured by the Americans, who had been painted as ruthless, cruel aggressors who would stop at nothing to torture and kill civilians. Well, the devastation of the battle and the psychic shock of the mass suicides cast a spiritual pall over the island, leading to numerous supernatural encounters. Although Okinawa's people, with their traditions of ancestor and spirit worship, connect easily and deeply with notions of the supernatural, the decades since the battle took place saw an even greater uptick in reports of ghostly experiences. And these reports don't just come from the inhabitants. The service members and their families have also said they witnessed or became victim of the supernatural forces that seem to infest the island. Standing like guards along the southern coast of Okinawa are miles of formidable rocky cliffs. And staring out at the crystal blue and white capped Pacific, the clifftop sites offer unmatched scenic views and a place for photographers to snap postcard-like pictures. Islanders and even a few visitors claim that the fields above the cliffs are also the vantage spot to witness something much darker, something much more mysterious. Ghost. For example, there's a story of a visitor to the island who had spent some serious contemplative time in a peace museum which rests above the rocky southern shore. That was the scene of so much violence and tribulation during World War II. Many comment on the sharp contrast in the space now, the serenity of the museum and the grandeur of the ocean are contrasted by the recognition that a few decades ago, the very ground they now stand on had been a scene of horror and death. Maybe those thoughts were filling the mind of this visitor as he stepped ever closer to the side of the cliff. And maybe he imagined those gray ships and landing craft dotting the sea in front of him. Maybe he could even feel the panic of the islanders who saw the men swarming on their beaches as vicious conquerors, not liberators. As he got closer to the edge, though, he suddenly transitioned from imagining ghosts to actually sensing them. They were all around him, and he wasn't the only one to have this sensation. Many visitors detect something, rush past them toward the ocean. Some say it's just the wind, but they claim to hear the heavy pounding of footsteps sprinting toward the cliffside. Some even hear shrieks. Experts on the ghost of Okinawa believe the reports are residual spirits. And a residual haunting, the energy of a highly emotionally charged event becomes embedded in the area where the event occurred. And it plays out over and over again. Sometimes these reenactments are witnessed by observers in their own reality. Experts in the paranormal field say the terror that the mass suicide victims must have felt certainly fits the description of emotionally charged event. But the paranormal incidents on the overlooks above the Okinawa southern beach goes far beyond sounds and feelings. In this area, people have also claimed to see the ghost and haunt the island. Witnesses say they've seen filmy shadows streaking toward the edge of the cliff and then vanishing. Often haunting screams echo over the fields as the ghosts make their appearance. A number of similar apparitions are seen at a golf course in Okinawa's Kadena Air Base. According to several reports, golfers enjoying a calm, quiet evening on the links are shocked to see a group of Okinawan girls wander across the greens. Now, maybe they're just schoolgirls taking a shortcut. But a shortcut to where? As the golfers watch, they say the solid figures of these girls begin to fade and finally disappear. And quite often, these sightings are accompanied by horrific wailing. With experts on the base's hauntings, believe the ghostly accounts related to World War II legend and a group of high school girls committed suicide at the very site that's now the golf course. Right before the American invasion, the Japanese military pressed these girls. Some accounts say there were 17 of them in the surface. When the attack happened, the girls broke into a run and then in one final act of desperation committed suicide. And their terror reportedly lives on. Now, Jane Hitchcock, author of Ghost of Okinawa, writes that while the whole island is supernaturally active, there are several spots associated with World War II actions that are especially haunted. And one of the most haunted sites on the island is a high-security area in the grassy field of Kadena. She writes about one famous story of a security guard who became curious about all the rumors of hauntings that swirled around the area. And one spot in particular is said to be haunted by the ghost of Japanese troops. In fact, people told him that an entire regiment of Japanese troops supposedly stalked the field. Well, he decided to satisfy his curiosity one evening, although satisfied might not describe the results of his investigation. He said he pulled into an area and stepped out of his patrol vehicle, and immediately he began to sense the presence of spirits. And then he heard them. The guard claimed he was enveloped in the thunderous echo of hundreds of boots heading his way. It sounded exactly like a regiment of the troops on the move heading in his direction. Well, he immediately lost his nerve and jumped back into his vehicle. And just like being caught up in the scene of a horror movie, everything at that point seemed to go wrong. For a few seconds, that must have seemed to him like hours, he fumbled with his keys, and once he got the right key, he finally got inside the vehicle, but he couldn't get the engine to start. And all this time, those sounds of marching troops getting closer and closer. Well, finally, he got his car started, but when he looked up, he wondered whether his efforts were in vain. He saw a formation of Japanese soldiers wearing War II era uniforms and weapons heading right for him. And the grimaces and expressions on their faces didn't make it look like surrender would be an option. Well, he closed his eyes and stomped on the gas pedal, and the car surged ahead and went right straight through that ghostly formation. Well, once outside the clutches of the Phantom Japanese Regiment, he said he's never going to go back there again. And while guards are troubled with attacking Phantom Regiments, maintenance workers have seen their own World War II spirits to battle. There's a building that once served as a place to conduct interrogations during the war. It's basically abandoned now, but there's a reason for that it being abandoned. The maintenance workers won't go near the place. Witnesses claim that horrible screams come from that building. The workers wonder whether it's not some type of residual spirit reliving the sheer hell of an interrogation. Whatever may be the source, the workers, they don't go near it. And the island isn't the only place you find spirits in Okinawa. The sea that surrounds it's also allegedly filled with occult energy. And those sea-bound spirits have been on revenge, according to some accounts. Okinawans have said that the ghosts of Japanese soldiers remain in the ocean just off the coast where the war's bloodiest fighting occurred. They say that these soldiers may be coming back to recruit for their ghostly army. In one incident, a group of Americans attended a party at an oceanside house. And during the party, the guests noticed something absolutely bizarre. An Okinawan man who joined the party appeared to be suspended in midair over a second-floor balcony. It seemed as though he was struggling with someone who was trying to push him over the railing. But as the guest who rushed to his aid noted, nobody else seemed to be nearby. It was as if an invisible force had grabbed the man. Now, the rescuers got there too late. Just as they reached him, the force finally got the better of him and he went over the side of the balcony. Ambulance rushed the man to the hospital where he remained for several days in a coma. After hearing the tale of her husband's mishap, the man's wife brought in an Okinawan spirit medium. The medium said the spirits of Japanese soldiers living in the area had attacked the man. And Americans later found out that many of their neighbors were afraid of those returning Japanese warriors. Now, many didn't venture out late, and most never stayed out on their balconies very long after dark. Apparently, they don't want to be drafted into Okinawa's mysterious spirit army. Well, you know, some of the most violent, brutal fighting of World War II, and maybe in world history, actually occurred in the Pacific. A desperate enemy brainwashed into a no-surrender mentality faced off against a massive, well-armed American military. The resulting immovable object versus an unstoppable force cascaded into a conflict that covered a wide spectrum of violence. Hand-to-hand combat, poundings from the air to sea, eventually highly technological weapons that created unprecedented destruction. The fury, the terror, the misery, the brutality and heartbreak of the fight brewed a storm of supernatural forces that people still experience and endure even today. Witnesses have seen these ghosts of the past all over the South Pacific, in areas that the Japanese invasion forces hit the hardest during the war, as well as during American operations to claim these conquered lands and islands back from the Japanese. And few places suffered as much as the Philippines. During World War II, a seminary stood on Dominican Hill. And it wasn't just a spiritual refuge, it was a refuge from the onslaught of invading Japanese troops. Citizens of the Philippines hoped they'd be safe from the Japanese Imperial Army behind the walls of the seminary. They hoped the invaders wouldn't violate the sanctity of the church, but they were absolutely wrong. Japanese soldiers took over the seminary and turned that strategically important site into their headquarters. In fact, some said the seminary became the Army's torture headquarters. The Japanese continued to face resistance from local insurgents whom the Japanese believed were helping to prepare the way for the American counter-invasion. The secret police called the The Kempei Tai used the base to extract information from and exact punishment on anyone they felt might be a threat to their occupation. Many of these suspects, along with priests and nuns and other innocent citizens who simply ran afoul of the occupying forces, were raped, tortured, and killed at the site. Well, when the war ended, some of the Filipino people may have escaped the grasp of the Japanese forces, but they remained under the grasp of a spectral occupation. Dominican Hill became proof of that. After extensive renovations due to the bomb damage that American forces inflicted on the site trying to recapture the base, entrepreneurs tried to turn the seminary into a hotel. Well, they found that while they struggled to attack paying guests, they didn't have any trouble marketing the rooms to ghosts. Staff and visitors claimed a heartbreaking wailing came from within the corridors of the building during the day. Not exactly a desirable amenity for a hotel. But at night, things got even creepier. According to some reports, the ghost of a priest stalked the corridors of the building. Guests at the hotel were shocked to see an apparition gliding through the halls. And each report contained one similar gruesome detail. This ghost didn't have a head. It's believed the headless priest was one of the victims of Japanese secret police. And there's another story that some guests reported, not just seeing a headless ghost, but a headless ghost carrying a plate in his hands. Wasn't exactly room service, though. In a final interesting twist, that plate carried the decapitated head. Well, a lot of residents who live near the site say you don't need to check in to find the ghost. The hill is actually teeming with supernatural activity, according to witnesses. Spirits of war victims and their oppressors are said to wander the ground, something that continues to attract ghost hunters even to this day. Nobody's blaming the spirits, but the hotel didn't stay in operation for very long. And the site quickly fell into disrepair, and the abandoned hotel and other buildings situated where the seminary once stood became the center of stories of the supernatural. While the hotel industry didn't quite make a go of it on Dominican Hill, the paranormal industry made a brisk business. Hundreds of paranormal investigators and people who just wanted a good scare flocked to the former seminary. And this abandoned hotel made the perfect living lab for the researchers. And for thrill seekers, it was like being placed on the set of a horror film. Over the years, a lot more stories and some say evidence of the paranormal flooded in. People took pictures and recorded videos purporting to show ghosts and other anomalous activity. And the site continues to be one of the most popular spots for those looking for run-ins with the paranormal in the Philippines. But it's certainly not the only occult reminder of the war's traumatic effect on the country. Well, you know, this December 7th, December 8th, we're talking about the beginning, at least for America, of the most brutal war in history. And the most brutal fighting, as I said earlier, was in the Philippines. Well, for tonight, we've come to the end of tonight's show. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk more about the ghost of World War II. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show. Sing, have a truly great evening.